Mean Old Lion Media presents Pregnancy Pearls. Meet Dr. Nicole Plenty, a double board certified OBGYN and high risk pregnancy expert. She's brilliant, well researched, and feisty. Growing tired of seeing complications of pregnancy that could have been prevented, she wanted a way to empower women through knowledge because, as she says, all doctors aren't created equal. This quest to educate women birthed this podcast, Pregnancy Pearls with Dr. Plenty.
Thanks for listening to Pregnancy Pearls podcast with me, Dr. Nicole Plenty. We have a week and a half, you guys, left of Women's History Month. So let's make the best of it. This is our month, so we should do something fun or at least something to pamper ourselves this month. We deserve it. And take somebody else along with you. Take another fellow woman to be pampered and to celebrate them and celebrate all the women in your life this month. We have a week and a half, but I will say this month is the month that we highlight Women's History Month, but it doesn't mean that we have to stop celebrating after this month, but I do want to make sure that we acknowledge all the women that we love this month. So go ahead. You deserve it. Pamper yourself, do something. So some of you have asked a lot of questions. Some of y'all's questions are pretty interesting about what kinds of births. And some of that is because some people have had a lot of birth traumas in their lives. And I've had a couple questions that have consistently been in theme with free birthing, which I didn't even honestly know it was a trend that free birthing was a thing. So I felt like I should do a little bit more research on it and we should talk about it on today's episode of the podcast. So if you've never heard of this, like I've heard of it, but I didn't know that it was trending. Free birthing is when a woman chooses to deliver at home without any help. You heard me, no help, by themselves. So for free birth, only the patient is present. And sometimes she has a partner or a family member who's present as well, but these family members have no expertise and their job is not to help with the birthing process. So the birthing process is straight on the mom. Now, this all became the rage in the height of COVID, right? Because people were restricted from bringing their loved ones to the hospital. There were a lot of strange things going on during COVID. Initially, remember whenever COVID was sort of announced, we knew that something was going on around January 2020. And then COVID was announced here in the US shortly thereafter. And then at the end of February is when we started having restrictions and the hospitals start shutting down into February, beginning of March. And at that time, we weren't allowing anybody in the birthing rooms. People were getting C-sections and rooms by themselves. We had very limited PPE. So we had no protective, patient protective devices. We had no protective, provider protective equipment. So we were just like trying to figure out the best way to not spread the virus. And meanwhile, we had this sort of temporary shutdown that then made the numbers plateau, and then the world opened back up again and the numbers shot back up. Now in the hospital setting, we had a lot of people dying, right? And we had not much PPE to protect even healthcare providers from getting the viruses. So because of that, a lot of people had really horrible, you know, sort of lonely experiences. Luckily, that only lasted for a couple months before they started allowing at least one visitor into delivering rooms. And as long as they were wearing a mask and proper PPE, if a person had COVID-like symptoms or confirmed COVID-19. And so because of that, all of a sudden people were like, I want to not deliver in the hospital. And there were a lot of midwives and people that did home births that were like, well, we're not going into people's homes because COVID's in people's homes. You can be asymptomatic and still carry COVID. Or, hey, we're not doing home births because we can go from one home that's asymptomatic, and then a week later, that person's positive, but then you've exposed everybody else's home. So a lot of people, even midwives, weren't doing home births during that time. So there was a survey in the UK that had 1,700 participants. And of that, because of these odd, awkward practices, about 4% of people had seriously considered a free birth. Okay, now I know what you're thinking. Oh, free birth means home birth. No, it doesn't. Free birth is different from a traditional home birth in that a home birth tends to have one or two midwives available. Home births by midwives receive thorough prenatal care and ensure that they are good candidates. Patients are good candidates for a home birth. So everybody can't just get a home birth. So just because you say, I want to deliver at home, you can have a professional midwife. That is a professional provider that's going to say, I'm putting it on my license that you're a good candidate to deliver at home. If you're not, a good midwife is going to say, I need you to refer you to a family practice doctor or an OBGYN because you need to be delivered in a hospital setting, or you have a high risk condition that puts you at a higher risk for either having a C-section or your baby needing some type of intervention, or you needing some intervention like control of blood pressure or control of blood sugars if you're a diabetic. Midwives, not everybody's going to be a midwife candidate. And so the people that are able to deliver at home have been thoroughly vetted. And it's like a touch and agree that this person is a good candidate by the midwife and their collaborating providers. Now, home birth sometimes also has a support person like a doula in addition to family members, in addition to a midwife that's doing the delivery. And there are some doctors, there are some family medicine doctors and some OBGYNs that also do home births. So I don't want to misspeak, but traditionally midwives do a lot of home births with only a small percent of physicians doing home births. Now, there are perceived benefits of free birth, okay, particularly for those who want one. The biggest one is autonomy. You get to choose who can be there, who's not going to be there. You get to choose if you're going to walk when you're having contractions. You get to choose if you feel the urge to push or if you don't want to push. You get to choose all of that, right? And there's also no one there that says you're on the clock. And if you don't deliver by, you know, within 24 hours or 48 hours or whatever the protocol is based on what's clinically going on, that you need a C-section. So it's known to be a very natural birth process. Now, of course, it sounds good. You get to labor at home. You don't have to pack a suitcase. You don't have to, you know, get in the car and go anywhere. You don't have to smell the smell of hospital. You don't have to hear the beeping of the machine with the baby's heart rate. You don't have to hear any of that, right? You can be comfortable. You can watch Netflix when you want to while you're in labor. You get to do whatever you want, but there are risks to that. So you have no midwife, family medicine physician, or OBGYN when complications occur, like bleeding or shoulder dystocia. And because of that, you may not be able to get your baby out. Like, it's very hard to do maneuvers on yourself to get a baby that's stuck out, okay? And if there's someone untrained there, it's going to be hard for them to also get a baby unstuck out. And the biggest risk, if you have a baby that is stuck, you're pulling and pulling and pulling. That can obviously cause a lot of trauma and loss of the baby if you have that complication, if you're not with somebody that's trained. Even the most skilled person, it is something that has to be constantly practiced, and we're constantly reviewing those techniques because it is something that can happen, and it is an emergency to get that baby out. You know, if you don't have time for anybody to pack you up in a car and go to a hospital if you have shoulder dystocia or the baby's shoulder getting stuck behind the mom's pubic bone. That's what I mean by shoulder dystocia, the baby getting stuck. You don't have time. You have minutes to get the baby out. Not 20 minutes to drive to the hospital. Not 10 minutes to drive down the street. Not 15 minutes to wait for the ambulance to get there. Minutes, okay? And if you have bleeding, depending on how briskly you're bleeding during the labor process or even after the baby is delivered, minutes matter. Minutes matter. You need to be somewhere that's equipped to get you blood, or at least have someone skilled around you to recognize that you're bleeding and to also know what steps to take to slow the bleeding down until you're able to get to the hospital. The next risk, there's no operating room available for an urgent C-section. So let's say your baby, you're delivering and you're pushing and pushing and pushing. How long are you going to push before you need a C-section? How long are you going to push? And then there's no one monitoring the baby to know if the baby is in distress and tolerating the labor process. Y'all, this is like what happened when we were in like the 40s and 50s, right? Even before that time, when women were dying in childbirth because they were just pushing for days. And we didn't know what happened to the baby until the baby came out, right? Maternal mortality was high. Neonatal mortality was high back in the day. You had people passing away and you have fathers raising children. And then you also had younger women marrying these older men just because their wives died in childbirth. Do we want to go back to that? This is what free birth takes us back to. Now, not only is a baby not being monitored, so you don't know when the baby's in distress, you also really don't know how dilated you are. You're at home. It's hard to check a cervix. You're going to check your own cervix to decide if you're fully dilated? Do you know how many people come to the hospital thinking that they are in labor, like they have to be dilated, and they're like 1 centimeter dilated? I mean, there's nobody monitoring your cervix. Nobody monitoring the baby. You're guessing that you're in full-fledged labor until you literally feel the baby's head coming out. You could have unrecognized blood pressure issues. I mean, people think because they don't have a history of high blood pressure, they're going to be fine during labor. That's not always the case. That's why we monitor vital signs during labor. Stress of labor really drives blood pressure up. So we need to know what to do to treat you and keep you safe during the labor and pushing process. And if we can't monitor you, you're home by yourself. There's nobody there to do that. Of course, if you can't monitor the baby, you don't know if the baby has good oxygen saturation or getting good oxygen delivery from the placenta. If you have a baby that has poor oxygen status during delivery, that's associated with cerebral palsy. That's associated with cerebral palsy when you have a baby that hasn't gotten good oxygen saturation during the labor process for a prolonged period of time, but you would not know because the baby is not being being monitored while you're in labor with a free birth. You can also have other complications like an unrecognized cord that prolapses through the cervix. This is the cause of stillbirth in the labor process and is usually a surgical emergency. That's the reason that somebody needs an emergency C-section, but if you're not at a facility that can do a C-section, or if you're not with providers that recognize a cord prolapse, then we're in a world of trouble, okay? Now, again, besides COVID, why is this still a thing? Because we're beyond the hype of COVID, right? COVID years, 2020, 2022, you know, we're out of that. 2023, it was basically treated like the flu, right? Why is it still a movement then, right? The biggest reason is there's a big distrust in the healthcare system, especially in the U.S., because we have a high rate of Black and brown women not making it during pregnancy. And there's an even higher rate of losing a mom after delivery because of some unrecognized postpartum complications that happen because of the pregnancy. And then the second one is unavailability of qualified midwives to attend home deliveries. We just don't have enough people in the healthcare field that are providers that do home deliveries. Now, despite the risk, even if you say, I want to take the risk, free birth is legal in every state except for Nebraska, where it is mandatory that you deliver be delivered by a trained healthcare professional. And it's a misdemeanor for a father to catch his baby in a non-emergent situation. Now, this law doesn't say anything about the mother catching the baby, so I assume that that's an option for her to reach down and catch her own baby. But it is legal. Despite all those risks, they still say it's legal. Now, there is a push for it to not be legal because why not, right? Like, free birth is giving women too much power to make decisions. And I'm not saying that this is wrong, because I do think that free birth is like way out there. Like, I think that home birth should be the most autonomy anybody's given. Free birth is just a little bit far stretched, in my opinion, because of all the risk and all the things that could happen. You need somebody trained. Now, there was this big Australian person named Janet Fraser, and she used to be a big advocate for free birth, right, in Australia, okay? On March 27th, 2009, the newborn daughter of the leading Australian unassisted childbirth advocate, that baby died in an unassisted home water birth. Okay. So that's why all these laws started to come into enactment, because this big prominent advocate that lost her baby, that all of a sudden started to come to light, like, oh, this is not as risk-free as we thought it was. Now, before, she had given a home birth unmonitored, okay, or unassisted, same thing as free birth, and said that it was the most glorious thing that she ever experienced, and that's why she was a big advocate for it. But then again, of course, her perception changed when she lost that child during an unassisted water birth. So I say all that to say these restrictions about, you know, whether it's legal or not, and about the American College of OBGYNs and other healthcare organizations and the guidelines that they put on insurance providers and on physicians and providers, it's not because they're not wanting the patient to have a positive experience. Trust me, we want you to have the best experience. But it's also about making sure that the baby has a safe experience as well. We have to make sure that we sort of take both patients in consideration. We take the mom into consideration and we take the baby into consideration. And yes, that mother ultimately makes the decision for this baby. But when we talk about things like a free birth, just because you have some stigma with the healthcare system, free birth may not be the way to go. It's not the safest thing for your baby in the event that there's an emergency that happens. Instead, I would ask you to advocate for yourself and make sure that you find a provider that you do feel comfortable with. And if you don't like the provider that you have, go interview other providers. And if you don't like how strict or structured, you know, perhaps your OBGYN is, find a family medicine physician that may practice a little bit less conservatively, or a midwife that will allow you to do a home birth if you are a candidate for a home birth. But just not having, you know, the knowledge and having a free birth at home, you know, ignorance is bliss until it isn't. So I would not recommend that. I really would encourage you to find someone and advocate for yourself so that you can get the best experience possible in the safest environment possible. All right. So now that we've talked a little bit more about free birth and how controversial it is, we're going to go to some cases and some questions.
Our first case is a 26-year-old who is 22 weeks pregnant with her second child. With her first child, she had a traumatic birth experience complicated by what she recalls as having unnecessary Pitocin, which caused her to have severe labor pains. When she asked for an epidural, she was told it's too late because she's already 9 centimeters dilated. After delivery, she was told that she had a tear in her vagina that required her having a repair in the operating room. She was told that her pregnancy was a successful vaginal delivery that does not put her at high risk for her next pregnancy. So to avoid more trauma, she would like to deliver at home with no restrictions. She is strongly considering a free birth because she doesn't want anyone taking away her decision making. She was referred to you to discuss the risks and benefits.
So in this case, I can understand that this patient who is 22 weeks pregnant, she had an awfully traumatic experience from her perception because she was in a lot of pain, right? And because she was in a lot of pain and didn't receive an epidural on time, for her, that's like she doesn't want to go through the process of reliving the hospital setting where she pushed and pushed and then had a whole bunch of pain because she was too far dilated to get an epidural. And then it sounds like she must have had a very extensive laceration. So there must have been a tear that was either a third degree laceration or a fourth degree laceration. Now, let me break these lacerations down, because people, if you're not following the podcast, you have no idea what a laceration is. But I would encourage you to go back to season 1 to learn more. But when we say a laceration, we mean a tear in the vaginal wall, okay? Your vagina tore at the time of delivery. And you can have something very superficial, like a little bitty tear in the vagina. That's called a first degree laceration. Sometimes those don't even require stitches. A second degree laceration is a little bit thicker than a first degree laceration, but it doesn't tear to the anus, right? It's not going close to the muscle of the anus. And it's usually stitched up in a couple layers, and people usually do fine. The third degree laceration is going to be, you know, to the anal sphincter, or the muscle that makes up, you know, you contracting the anus, okay, but not tearing through it. A fourth degree laceration is you're tearing through the anal sphincter, okay? So you are into the rectum, basically, is a fourth degree laceration. So first degree, very superficial. Fourth degree, very extensive through the anus or the anal sphincter or rectum, okay? And if you have a third or fourth degree laceration, traditionally, we want to make sure that everything is clean. We can see how deep everything is, because it's very important that if your anal sphincter, which is that muscle that you use to control stool coming out of your stool hole, the anus, okay? We want to make sure that that muscle is intact. If not, you can have incontinence, or, you know, you can just have a bowel movement on yourself because you can't hold it. Because of that, we have to basically irrigate. We're going to clean everything, and we're going to see what's exactly torn. We want to make sure that we're controlling bleeding. And when you have a more extensive laceration, like a third or fourth degree, sometimes we do, to get you comfortable, have to bring you to an operating room so that we can have anesthesia there to make sure that you're comfortable, because it is a little bit more extensive of a tear. We also want to make sure we have things to clean you in the event that you do have a third or fourth degree laceration. We want to make sure that we want to clean to reduce your risk of infection. At the very minimum, we don't want an infection, right? If you have an infection, which is very easy to get an infection if you have a fourth degree laceration, because again, that's through the anus. Stool comes out of the anus. So we don't want a whole bunch of stool in the mix of a vaginal laceration repair. So we've got to irrigate and clean. And sometimes we have to take people to the operating room. Now, it's very uncomfortable to be just delivered in stirrups in a sterile, cold operating room, awake because you have an epidural, with us cleaning and suturing up a tear. Okay. So I can understand how this patient would say, this was a very traumatic birth experience for me. And no one's experience is the same. And so for some people, that would not be a traumatic birth experience, because it sounds like she probably had a good outcome of the baby, but only had like a tear and delivered without an epidural. For other people, just the trauma of pain is enough for them to be like, you know, have nightmares. And then you add needing a procedure on top of that, being brought to the operating room so that you can have, you know, cleaning of that tear before closure, is best practices, is the right thing that should have been done. But we can't take away that it does take away from the ideal birthing experience of the patient. But when you talk about free birth, just because you don't want restrictions, one, that's dangerous. So if you had a previous laceration, third or fourth degree, you are more likely to have another tear. And we don't want you to tear at home. So that's dangerous. Next, if you had a fourth degree laceration, then technically speaking, you should be considered for a C-section with this pregnancy. And I have patients all the time that say, I want to take the risk of fourth degree laceration. Well, let me tell you what it is. Fourth degree lacerations, because that tissue is weaker, your anal sphincter is weaker. If you tear again, or even if you don't, just the pressure of having birth and trauma of the tissues between the vagina and the anus, called the perineum, that can create what's called fistulas. And fistulas are little sort of connections between the vagina and the rectum. Okay. So you can be leaking stool out of your vagina if you get a fistula. You can have another breakdown of a tear and need another repair. The more repairs you have of fourth degree lacerations, the weaker that sphincter is. Even if you don't have a fistula or the connection between the vagina and the anus, you still have a weakening of the muscle. So then you could have issues with holding your stool. It's called fecal incontinence. I know people, you know, joke about, oh, I sneezed and I lost a little bit of pee. Well, you can sneeze and be losing a little bit of stool. So that's why, you know, and that's a lifetime thing you have to deal with. Like getting a repair of your anal sphincter because it's weak now is really a big deal. Having an increased risk of a connection between the vagina and the anus, those things are really hard to repair because now you're creating more surgery and more inflammation and you're more likely to get other fistulas. It can be an ongoing cycle. So to prevent that, the national guideline for the American College of OBGYN says, hey, 4-3 laceration, standard of care is to offer the patient another a primary C-section if you never had one to prevent further complications of 4-3 lacerations. Because we know it's a thing. It's a thing to have complications after a 4-3 laceration. And so if a person does not want a C-section, then they have to sign a consent saying they understand the risk and they understand that it could lead to fecal incontinence or a fistula, which is stool coming through your vagina that can need further surgeries or further repairs. I don't say these things to freak you out, but I do want you to know the facts. I'm here to give it to you real. And if you had a 4-3 laceration, I would recommend a C-section for your next baby. So I definitely wouldn't recommend free birth. I definitely wouldn't recommend a free birth. So if you had a 3rd or 2nd-degree laceration and you feel like the trauma of delivering in the hospital is too much, if the memories are too much, then what about delivering with a midwife and delivering at home? Okay, let's go through your history, which you haven't told me anything about your history, but we have to make sure you don't have anything like high blood pressure or diabetes or people that are morbidly obese and may have issues with monitoring the baby or other like autoimmune conditions. Those are people that need to be delivered in the hospital setting, okay, or at least a birthing center. But if you have no medical problems and you only had a 2nd-degree laceration or even a 3rd, you may be considered a candidate for a home birth by either a midwife or even a physician. But I would not recommend being a free birth at all. I would not recommend that at all. So the case pearl for this case is even home births should be attended by a certified and licensed healthcare professional provider. All right, so what's our next case or question?
We have a question and it says, can a free birth be done at a birthing center?
No, a free birth is done at home without an attendant. Most birthing centers require there to be someone in the room with you that is certified and qualified to deliver your baby. Now, some people confuse this with, can I guide my baby out with a healthcare provider? Well, yeah, you can do that. Can my husband be the person that guides the baby out with the healthcare provider? I've done that myself. I have dad, hey, dad, hold here, hold there. I'm going to guide your hands and we're going to get this baby out together. Yes, we want your family to participate and we want you to participate in your birthing experience, but a birthing center still does not allow free births, okay? Assisted births, yes. Unassisted births, no, okay? And if you want that kind of experience where you want your husband to cut the cord or be, you know, gowned if you have a vaginal delivery and help deliver the baby, you can talk to your provider about those things. And most providers are very willing to let your significant other or family member of your choice be present and put their hands on that baby either while the baby's coming out of the vagina or right after. We're very accommodating. The only time we will change our minds or have to tell you no is if obviously you're in distress. If you're in distress or your baby's in distress, then sometimes we have to do maneuvers to get the baby out. For example, like when we talked about a shoulder dystocia or the baby's shoulder getting stuck behind the mom's pubic bone or pelvic bone, that's something we have to be able to control that situation and get the baby out quickly. So after that, then we'll let the dad clamp the cord and cut the cord. But that may not be, that's an emergent time that we have to intervene. But that's, again, why you have us there, to make sure that you're safe and your baby's safe and you get the best possible outcome possible. But if there are things that you want in your birth plan, I encourage you, make your request known, right? As providers, it doesn't matter what kind of provider you have. We can't read minds, y'all, but we want you to have the best possible experience. And there are some people that I've delivered in the past that I've said, hey, dad, do you want to cut the cord? And they don't. Like, some people are like freaked out about blood and they don't. And we don't want anybody passing out and we don't want to force them to do something that we think may be cool for them to do but they don't want to do that, right? Some moms want to feel the head as the head comes out. Some moms don't. They don't want their hand down there. And everybody's different. But talk to your provider about, hey, what's the ideal experience? If I could, you know, plan my day, what are the things that I really, that would make my day? You know, do I want to do skin to skin? Do I want my spouse to cut the cord or the dad to cut the cord? You know, do I want to be the first person to hold the baby, or is it okay that dad can hold the baby? Do I want a lot of people in the room, or do I only want my provider and myself in the room? Like, those are things we can talk about to make your experience the best experience possible. And birthing centers are the most home-like environment. It's like literally being in your bedroom. Like the rooms are set up like a little studio, right? And that it looks like home. And for the most part, they're going to act like you're at home and not checking you as often, but they're still monitoring you. You're able to walk around, but they're still monitoring you periodically. And there are things like pictures that flip up that have oxygen draping down from the wall. Like, they have things in birthing centers to make sure you're safe. Even though it may look like your little home bedroom away from home, it's still a very well-attended facility. So no, free birth is not done at a birthing center. All right, medical intern, do we have any more email questions or cases?
Here's our second question, and it says, Dr. Plenty, I'm 43 weeks pregnant with my first child. My midwife referred me to her partner OBGYN to discuss an induction, but I do not want to see a doctor and do not want to be induced. My midwife says it's against nurse midwifery guidelines for her to keep me pregnant this long. So I'm opting for a free birth if she won't allow me to go into labor naturally with her in attendance. What are my risks?
The deal with being 43 weeks pregnant and not being induced is that there is a higher risk of fetal loss after about 41 and a half weeks. And there's also a higher risk, even those kids that survive, of having meconium aspiration syndrome, where those babies can aspirate, meaning fluid go down the wrong pipe. So instead of it going to the stomach, it's going to be aspirated into the lungs. And if the baby has had a bowel movement on the inside, they can aspirate that stool into their lungs, and that can cause really bad pneumonia. And babies that are, 42, 43 weeks with pneumonia on a ventilator, like, their immune system is not there yet. Remember, babies don't really make immune systems. Their full immune system is not developed for 6 months. And so they're depending on antibodies that have crossed the placenta during pregnancy and antibodies they get from breast milk and those breastfed babies to give them an immune system. So you can imagine if a baby has pneumonia because of stool in the lungs, it can be tough for that newborn baby to fight that infection off. So meconium aspiration syndrome, it has some long-term complications. And to avoid that, we know that now we don't let people go past about 41 and a half weeks. So at 43 weeks, you're going to be referred, you refer to somebody like me. The first thing I'm going to do is say, how rare is it for somebody to not go into labor by this time? What's stopping this baby from not going into labor? So I'm going to, one, confirm your dates, meaning, are you sure about the first day of your last menstrual period? And if we're not dating you by that, when's the earliest ultrasound you've had? And the earlier the ultrasound, the better. But I know that if we have a second trimester ultrasound, that could be inaccurate dating. That second trimester ultrasound, you're talking about plus or minus up 10 days to 21 days, depending on where you are in that. And that could mean that really, you may be really 40 weeks, right? But even if you're really 40 weeks, that's still room to induce you with somebody with poor dates, right? Because we don't know if you're really 40 weeks. So I'm going to confirm those dates and see really how far along you are. And if you are close to 40 weeks by the dating criteria that's reviewed, then I would still recommend that you be induced. The other thing I want to know is, if you're not going into labor, which is usually triggered by the baby, right? There's usually signals from the baby's brain to the baby's adrenal glands that are going to simulate labor. So usually if I have a baby that's not going to labor, I'm looking at the brain, right? Because anencephalic babies are babies that have major brain defects, a missing part of the skull. They tend to not go into labor spontaneously because they don't have the part of the brain that's sending the signal to trigger labor, right? So I'm going to look at that baby's brain to make sure that we have all the structures in the brain and they're normal. Okay. I assume that at this point you've been compliant and you've had an anatomy scan at 20 weeks at least, but I want to make sure that nothing, there's been no insult in the third trimester that's caused any issues with different parts of the baby's brain or adrenal gland. So I'm going to do an anatomy scan. I'm going to look at the baby from head to toe as much as I can at 43 weeks, because it's very hard. Once you hit 28, 30 weeks, it's hard, y'all, to see every area of the baby, because you're looking through shadowing and bone and things. So the best time is 20 to 24 weeks to get an anatomy scan. So you're talking about 43 weeks. Whew, that's going to be hard. But I should be able to see the brain. Even if you're head down, even if I have to do a transvaginal ultrasound to see the compartments of the brain, I should be able to see it, right? It may be harder for me to see the kidneys and the adrenal gland, but I should be able to see the brain. So I'm going to make sure that that's normal at least. And then if those things are normal, your baby's size is completely normal, your dating criteria is consistent with your date, then I would encourage you to be induced. And your midwife is absolutely correct. The guidelines say you're not supposed to go to 43 weeks because of what we just talked about, meconium aspiration syndrome and the increased risk of a post-term stillbirth. So we don't want those things to happen. So those are your risk of waiting even further to go into labor. We could be waiting and we have a baby that passed away, and we don't want that to happen. And free birth is not going to allow you necessarily to go into labor naturally. You may be somebody that doesn't go into labor naturally. It's 43 weeks. You haven't gone into labor. So you have to ask yourself, how long can I wait? Now, if I have somebody that's adamant that they definitely don't want to go into labor, I mean, they don't want to be induced, then we can compromise. Perhaps you can come in a couple times the week, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and be put on the monitor to see, make sure the baby's well-being is okay. Perhaps we can compromise there. And if you don't go into labor in the next couple of days, by the end of the week, then you're induced, okay? Or you can have a very slow induction where they do cervical ripening over, you know, 12 to 24 hours. And that way it allows your cervix to soften and get ready for labor a little bit easier. There are things that we can do to make you, you know, comfortable and to encourage your body to go into labor more naturally. But at 43 weeks, we got to do something to push your body there. And we have to do something to monitor you to make sure that this baby is not showing any signs of distress, and make sure nothing's going on that's causing the baby not to go into labor, or your body not to go into labor naturally. The risk, losing a pregnancy, meconium aspiration syndrome, or the stool being aspirated into the wrong pipe of the baby, which could cause some severe long-term issues. All right, medical intern, do we have any more email cases? And she's shaking her head no. So you guys, thanks so much for listening to Pregnancy Pearls Podcast. I hope you've learned a little bit more about free births. If you enjoy the show, make sure to share me with your friends, rate and comment. If you or someone you know had a pregnancy complication or has a unique pregnancy situation, let me know about it. Email me at pregnancypearls@gmail.com to hear your topic or case discussed on one of our podcast episodes. Also, remember to follow me on Instagram at pregnancy_pearls and Facebook at pregnancypearls. You can also feel free to check out the website, which is www.drnicoleplenty.com, for free pregnancy downloadables and information. And for goodness sake, catch up on all four seasons of the podcast. In closing, remember to advocate for yourself. You are your biggest advocate, and no one knows what's going on with your body except for you. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Pregnancy Pearls is hosted by Dr. Nicole Lee Plenty. Produced by Nicole Plenty and Janine Brunson Johnson. Executive producer Ken Johnson. Find Pregnancy Pearls on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Please subscribe and rate. The content of this podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice for diagnosis or treatment of individual medical conditions. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified health provider with specific questions regarding a medical condition. Pregnancy Pearls is a Mean Old Lion Media production.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.